S-R-A.
Is it done?
No, it's not done.
Don't overcook it. Overcook it's no good. It defeats its own purpose. What are you doing? I just said don't overcook it. You're overcooking it. Bring it over.
You want your steak?
Bring it over. Bring it over. It's like a piece of charcoal. Bring it over here.
You want your steak?
Yeah, right now.
Good. Here's your steak. Can't wait till it's done.
No, yeah. I can't wait.
Good. Thank you. Happy? Happy?
That's all I want. That's all I want.
Here. Not more. There.
Find me about a steak, huh?
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the most you ever lost on a coin toss?
Sir?
The most you ever lost on a coin toss.
Yeah, what's up?
He wants to kill me so bad he can taste it.
Oh, God, I was going to kill him.
Attica! Attica!
What are you
doing? Attica! 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 Attica!
There's only one man who would dare give me the raspberry. Lone Star!
Hey, Stella!
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
Your milkshake. I drink it up.
You are now listening to Cinnabar Press.
Welcome to episode 63 of Cinema Crespo Diso. Yes, I am your host, Christopher Crespo. Once again, on board ESS Crespo Diso 2.0, floating out in the most international of international waters. Doesn't get more international than it does out here. We got tacos, we got curry chicken, we got burgers, fish and chips. What else represents international food?
We got some pho.
Yeah, we got plenty of that pho. We got so much pho, It's awesome. That was the voice of Drusen Cockburn. Drew, how's it going, dude?
It's going, dude.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for hanging out again. We appreciate it.
You're really stretching it with this whole international thing, bro.
The most international. You know what you can do on international waters? You know what I learned from The Simpsons that you can do on international waters?
What?
You can have a beast on beast fighting.
Well, it's international waters, bro. Anything goes.
Exactly. So how about
for all intents and purposes, international waters, it's just like no laws.
So you give a monkey a knife, you give an elephant a knife, and you see what happens.
Elephant, knife, monkey, knife.
Elephant, monkey, knife fight.
Fight. Monkey. I think the monkey would probably win.
See?
It's those opposable thumbs, man.
Yeah, but the elephant's got that hide.
The monkey's got a knife.
The elephant can stomp out the monkey.
What if the monkey gets on the elephant's back and just starts going ham with that knife? Bro, it's over.
Going ham. Kind of like that rock band Wham. No?
No.
I don't know, man. I might side with the elephant. You can weigh in with your decision on Twitter. Let us know on Twitter at Crespo Diso.
Who wins?
Hashtag elephant or hashtag monkey. Who wins in the elephant monkey knife fight on most of international waters? And, we'll tally up the scores and let you know what those two or three people say.
Exactly. Week. And then when we have our actual elephant monkey knife fight, we'll let you know if what you thought is true.
Mm-hmm. Right. Precisely.
So when do you want that set up for? Like tomorrow, the next day? Something like that?
I mean, we got time. No rush.
Well, I'd like to get it done by next week.
I mean, can you procure an elephant that fast? The monkey's easy.
Dude, international waters, bro.
Yeah, but...
I've got connections.
I've made
connections over the weeks. So I think I can do this.
Good thing we moved out to this bigger boat.
Yeah.
So people don't know it's an ark.
Of sorts.
No, it's an ark. It's a smaller ark, but it's still sort of an ark. All the baby elephants are upstairs. You can hear them running around sometimes when you come over.
Mm-hmm.
We got hooked up by Paramount Studios. They're like, listen, Noah's coming out. We're afraid it's not going to make much money. They knew we needed a new Crespo Diso studio boat thing, so they hooked us up.
With they were just like, here, have this arc.
No, yeah, they're like, hey, listen, we'll pay for the cost. You just have to build a boat in the shape of a big box and keep some animals on there.
And keep it out in international waters forever.
So that's what we're doing. So we can use the elephants. Paramount might not be happy about us using those elephants, but
well, they're gonna be even angrier with me for using the monkeys. Those monkeys are expensive, bro. I saw the bill for those things.
You saw the monkey bill?
I saw the monkey bill.
Did you see the monkey food bill?
No.
Good golly. That's what I'm talking about. What the hell are we talking about? This is Cinema Crespity, so we're supposed to be talking about movies. We're out here just hanging out. If you want to listen to one of us blabble about shit other than movies, you got bonus episodes. Actually, speaking of which, Drew.
I'm kind of surprised that that went on for as long as it did.
It went on for a little while. The bonus episodes, we just did the Crespo Disco number 6, our favorite live experiences. Mm-hmm. Got some really good feedback on that one. People really enjoyed that episode. So if you haven't heard it yet, go back and listen to it. And also as well, really good feedback on the food episode.
Nice.
Which I just described to people as the episode in which Drew just hates on people who are all gluten-free and claim to have certain allergies. And without really thinking of that, I guess. All fair points. He's got a bunch of fair points, people. I suggest checking it out.
I do have some fair points.
Unless you're gluten-free and you have a thin skin, because that'd be a tough mix. But still, it's entertaining. Just so that was Dr. Drew's 2 cents. We got a CCN coming up this week. Got to figure out what the hell I'm going to talk about.
Man, what are you going to talk about, dude?
No idea. That's when I do, like everyone else does, the what's in the news?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my bit, man.
Yeah.
The lazy man. I'll go to Yahoo Odd News that day. See what's going on.
Like, here we go. This is what we're going to talk about.
Anyway, what's going on over here? A little Jay Leno style. He's not relevant anymore.
I hate Jay Leno.
Yeah, we all hate Jay Leno.
He wasn't very good.
No. Middle America loved him. That's why.
Middle America likes a lot of shit.
Just not intimidating. We love you, Middle America. And you know shout out to our listeners in Middle America.
Oh, maybe that's why Jimmy Fallon got the job. He's very unintimidating nice. As well.
Ryan Seacrest, very inoffensive. Yeah.
Totally inoffensive.
Ryan Seacrest prides himself in being bland.
Like, if I saw Ryan Seacrest in a dark alley, I would not be afraid. Like, I'd be like, oh, this is Ryan Seacrest. Don't worry about him. He can't hurt you.
Right. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly right. Wow. Again, what the hell is this? So bonus episodes. Yeah, I don't know what the hell I'm going to talk about. Probably something offensive that'll drive people away. So, but
hey. Oh, so you're going my route.
Yeah, that's what you I usually leave that up to you, but it seems a lot of fun, so.
It is.
And people respond well to it. You know, it's just, what are we pussyfooting around for? You know what it is? I know what it is.
I never understood that term.
Pussyfooting?
Yeah.
Well, you got a computer right in front of you. Why don't you look it up? I bet you pussyfooting.
I mean, when
that
I think
has to do with a cat and the way a cat walks around. Like, you got a crazy, stupid cat that we brought here on the Ark with us. I don't know why we did that. That was the dumbest
that
idea
was.
Ever. Should have left it on the list. You can... Can you hear it? She was meowing for a second.
Or
she
is it the elephants?
We knew... And then the elephants. The elephants. They know we're talking about them. The elephants and the cat. It's just like... I don't know. Why?
All right, I'm just saying, when I think pussyfoot, I see a certain image
you
in my head.
Pussyfoot is like a cat, the way a cat walks around. It's, you know, kind of gingerly. Like when it walks on a fence, you know, you're being kind of evasive about something. Right? Pussyfoot.
Yeah, I mean, it's to refrain from committing oneself to tread or move warily or stealthily, I guess, like a cat.
Yeah, there you go.
First known use, 1903.
Yeah, there you go. Pussyfooting around, see?
I'm just saying.
Right? There we go. I know why the tangent. I know why the sloppy opening. I know why, Drew.
Why?
Because 11:30 in the morning, jar of sangria may not have been the best idea.
Well, I took a two-hour nap. I don't know about you.
No, I've been drinking.
Oh, so you kept drinking while I slept.
I've still been drinking.
Nice. So
well, it was either that or fall asleep, and I didn't want to fall asleep.
So I sobered up.
I had some work to do. I had some notes. I had to get the show prepped together. I had to put together all the sound, the elements, I had, you know, stuff like this. That doesn't come out of nowhere, Drew.
Actually,
someone's got to prep
it,
that.
It kind of does.
Well, no, I mean, I had to download it. I had to plug this thing in here. I had to make this stand here so then I can make the
I still think that's Nazis.
Yeah, that is a Nazi. I should have hit this one. Yeah, the Nazis one was a bad one. I don't know why I have the Nazis one on here. That was a
well, Hitler was kind of popular.
It's labeled supporters.
Well, they are supporters, except yes, they should be labeled Nazi supporters.
It should be labeled Nazi. I agree. It should be. 11:30 a.m. Delicious sangria. You know, when I looked at the jar, I was like, oh, that's good for me, like 1.5 each, right?
Five.
I mean.
Five each.
Why? How did that happen?
The answer was five.
Maybe because it was so close to Easter?
Perhaps.
The Lord, anyway.
Oh, it is. Oh, that's so awesome.
You like that idea? Is that idea?
Well, I just had a little train of thought in my head. And realize that my favorite holiday this year is on Easter Sunday.
Oh, that'll do. You people can put that one. You can look back a couple of Dr. Drew's 2 cents and then put that one together pretty easily. Because, hey, you know, that's what podcasting is all about. Just put it all out there. Hey, you know what, Drew?
What?
Let's get the show started. How's that sound?
Okay.
All right. Why don't we get the Crespodiso Randomizer 9000 set up? You got that there over there, dude?
Yes, sir.
Why don't you go ahead and get that?
Why don't you hit the button and turn the thing on?
Well, yeah, I'm waiting for you there. Yeah. That's all together. It's all the thing. It's like popcorn. And then when it stops shaking, you know it's done inside. And then... So you can go to chriscrespo.com to see... Each Netflix instant pick of the week. We do a different one every week. Sometimes they're not on there, which is annoying. That happened was last week with, I believe, was High Noon.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember that? Yeah, High Noon was not on there, which is a shame. So Drewster Cogburn is making sure. He's giving us a thumbs up. He says we're good. So let's see what's going to join the pantheon of Crespity. So Netflix instant picks of the week. Drews, go!
Al Pacino with Johnny Depp.
Donnie Brasco.
Correct, sir.
All right. Very nice. I remember seeing Donnie Brasco. Okay. 1996 or 1997.
I'm going to go 1997.
Good job, Chris. 1997. Yeah, I remember 1997. That was around the exact same time. You know what else was in theaters that year, 1997?
Huh.
Anniversary of Star Wars. The Star Wars re-releases, the first time it came out with new footage.
Man, I remember those. I remember them too. I skipped school and
a lot of people skipped school.
Bought tickets for the first shows that I could, you know, bear to wake up for.
Right, yeah.
And
that's what me and my friend did for episode one, Phantom Menace.
Instead of going to school, I did that for Phantom Menace too, and then refused to do it for any of the other ones.
All right, well, this is how this all ties together. Saw the first Star Wars, right, re-release with everyone, with a... dad, brother, and some cousins, and it was cool. Went back a couple weeks later for when they put out episode two. Okay. We get to the theater. It's a Saturday. Theater's packed. It's like in the afternoon. And Empire Strikes Back re-release.
Yeah.
Sold out.
Well, it's the best one.
Sold out. It was the best one. Right? Sold out. So here's what happened. We looked at the marquee real quick. Huge line behind us. We're like, what's playing soon? You know, like 4 or 5 tickets, however many there was for Dante's Peak.
Ooh.
With Pierce Brosnan.
I remember that. I think I saw that in theaters.
Yeah, that's what was playing at that time also, Dante Speaks. So we walk into the theater, and we're all of us walking down the hall, and we're all looking at our tickets, and we all know none of us want to see fucking Dante's Peak. Not a single one of us. Even my brother, who at that time, he was like, I don't know, 8?
He's like, screw this.
Yeah, he was like, movie about a mountain, gray, cold, no. Don't. I want to see Star Wars, you know? He's a little kid, right? So we ended up, I don't know whose idea it was. Might have been mine. Who knows? It could have been. Look up. We see there's Donnie Brasco's playing in one of the big theaters. And it's getting ready to start. And over pretty near by, the first Star Wars was about to start as well. So my dad took my brother, went into Star Wars. Apparently, they found one seat. And my brother had to sit on my dad's lap the entire movie.
Nice.
Me and my cousin, we went to Donnie Brasco. Both of us definitely like 15, maybe 16.
Yeah, should not have been in a rated R movie.
Definitely in a rated R movie that deserved to be rated R for violence and language and a little bit of nudity, a little bit of, you know, women slapping around, shit like that, which brings me to the next thing. So we go in, that's how we end up seeing Donnie Brasco in a theater, right? And it's a great movie. I really enjoy it. It's Mike Nichols, I believe, is the director. He's an English feller. So that's kind of what makes this movie a little unique. Is that
Mike Newell.
Mike Newell, N-O.
N-E-W-E-L-L.
Mike Newell, N-E-W.
N-E-W-E-L-L.
Mike Newell, English fellow. That's part of the thing. What makes this movie kind of cool is that it's kind of with an outsider's perspective, because it's not made by an Italian dude. It's not a Martin Scorsese movie. It's not by, you know, it's not a Robert De Niro movie, because he's, you know, did a Bronx Tale. It's some English guy adapting a book, adapting kind of like a Goodfellas type deal, right? And also, in my high school, someone that I went to school with, his dad was like worked at a salon, was a hairdresser, and was also an actor. This Italian dude, and he was in the Analyze This. Mm-hmm. He was in like the big mob scene at the end, and he got shot there. He did an episode of The Sopranos where he got killed at the end of that.
Sweet.
And he is in Donnie Brasco, where he's one of the mob guys hanging out in the corner all the time outside, waiting for people to show up so he can say hello. And he's just standing there.
Awesome.
So yeah, that's a guy's dad. I know that guy. Anyway, so we're in the movie, right? Me and my cousin were seeing this movie. And I always remember this for, you know, it's just one of those little things, one of those little details in life, right? Or just the whole thing in the movie where, you know, if you've seen it, you know it, but the whole forget about it. They say it over and over and over, and there's even a scene where
they explain it.
Yeah, Johnny Depp explains the different ways of saying forget about it. About, you know, 2/3, maybe later into the movie, you know, Johnny Depp's character, after all the pressures of being an undercover cop, his marriage has fallen apart. So I believe it's Anne Heche, isn't it?
Correct.
Right? And everything, they're arguing, it's going poorly. She says some things, and he hits her.
Yeah.
And when he hits her, it's like it gets really quiet in this scene, you know, to let the moment sink in. And the theater, by this point, it's a huge theater, and it's packed. And it's really quiet in the theater during the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then one guy, like, you know, it's dark, you can hear. One guy just yells, forget about it. Like, in the middle of that, everyone starts laughing. Totally kills the tension of the moment. But nice. It was so funny. Laughed my ass off. That was good stuff. So that won't happen when you watch Donnie Brasco on Netflix. Unless you know the story now. And, like, you watch it with some friends, you know. And then when that part happens, you can say forget about it. And pretend, you know, you're the original guy with the... The quick-witted response to domestic abuse. But it's a good movie.
Forget about it.
So there you go. Donnie Brasco wrote that down. Good job. All right. Drew, let's get into the good old box office review. What do you say about that?
All right. Sounds good to me.
All right. Where do you want to start?
All right. Well, I mean, start off number 5, I guess.
Number 5?
I mean, unless you want to...
No, might as well... Number 7, right? What else did
we have? I'm still looking at this. All right, yeah, we'll go with number 7.
Maybe we should have done a little show prep instead of drinking all that sangria.
Something to talk about. Well, actually, no, not even number 7. We're going to have to start at...
16. Here we go.
All right.
Get the show organized. Back on track.
Starting off number 16.
Here we go.
Bad words.
What
had
you
a weekend gross of $500,000, but it's because it's only on 87 screens.
Really, only 87 screens.
Yes.
Look at that.
Grand total of $656,000 on a budget of squat.
So you know, you gotta imagine it's a super cheap movie.
It's gotta be
just probably a few million dollars. 87 screens across the country.
One of them
an average take of $5,700 per screen. That's, you know, that's actually not bad for only 87 screens.
Yeah,
for making over $500,000 in a weekend with no advertising,
hardly any at all.
I mean, we saw one or two trailers in front of a couple, I guess, comedies or something. I can't remember they played in front of. But yeah, we saw Bad Words, directed by Jason Bateman.
Correct.
About a dude who is an older guy. And he decides to enter spelling bee contest.
For his own reasons.
And, hey, Drew, okay, why don't you go ahead and let the people know. Tell them what you thought about this little independent movie.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was, I mean, if you enjoy Jason Bateman, you know, just kind of walking around being a kind of a cocky, smart asshole whole time.
Yeah, pretty much.
And he... I mean, for the first half of the movie, he makes fun of this tiny little Indian kid. And then the second half of the movie, he's still making fun of this tiny little Indian kid, but in a lighthearted, very friendly way.
Yeah, we're buddies. Like, I'm ribbing you now, Slumdog.
You know, exactly. And yeah. Then I really like how an Academy Award winning movie has brought upon a new racial slur for an entire group of people.
That's pretty funny, actually. I didn't even think about that.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, yeah. ever since that movie has come out, you know, people call it Indian people Slumdogs. They just say, what's up, Slumdog?
What's up, Slumdog? That's not racist. Yeah,
it's totally racist. Totally racist, by the way.
Wow, yeah. Good point, Drew. Yeah. Good point. And this movie just... reinforces that.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah, so that is true. All right, and so it's pretty much a comedy, but it tries to be a little sentimental towards the end. There,
yeah, definitely.
You know, a little deeper. I think it tries to... it feels like it's reaching a little bit more.
It's trying to be deeper than it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay.
I mean, it was good enough.
It was all right. Good enough. It was definitely... It's good to see independent movies in theaters. It's good to see movies that, you know, that aren't based on...
That are directed by Jason Bateman.
Oh, you know, he's not necessarily in the indie world. He has connections, but yeah. I'm sure, you know, it wasn't easy for him to get the money together necessarily to make this movie. He had to struggle just like most other people to even get it in theaters. So it's good to support stuff like that. But then again, yeah, they could have been seen on DVD or on HBO.
It totally could have been.
Not really needed to see in a theater.
No.
We're not talking about robot jocks here.
No,
but still, yeah, that was good. When it gets to Redbox, check it out for sure. HBO, good time to check it out.
I mean, hell, that one guy sitting behind us really liked it.
There was one person at the theater was laughing the whole time. I think it was an older person, guffawing at some of that stuff. It felt like you know what it felt like. Some of it was like. Sort of Wedding Crashers, Hangover, like trying to go a little over the top, or even Superbad.
Ish.
Yeah, that type of comedy, but not that funny.
No, definitely not.
A little shy of that. And then a little sweeter overall.
Yeah, a whole lot sweeter overall.
Yeah, but that's still, it was all right. Yeah. And some racism.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the humor.
Part of the humor, true. Correct. So there you go. Bad words. It was good enough. As Drew says, put that on the poster, bad words, people. Put it on the poster, Jason Bateman. Quote, .. Good enough. Drew Sikogberg. Yes. So there you go. All right, what's next on our list?
All right, well, coming in at number 7 this week, the Grand Budapest Hotel had a weekend gross of $6.75 million, total gross of $12.96 million. On a budget of listed.
Not listed. Let's see how that looks in the pantheon of Wes Anderson movies when it comes to opening weekends. See, now that's the kind of thing. It's tricky. You can't really judge Wes Anderson opening weekends because this movie is never open wide, ever. Every opening weekend is a 4-screen weekend, exactly. Like 6 screens, you know. As a matter of fact, Bottle Rocket, his first movie, had the biggest opening weekend at 28 screens, which is crazy.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. Yes. 2, 5, 2, 2. The last 3, 4, 4, 4. Grand Budapest Hotel, Moonrise Kingdom, and Fantastic Mr. Fox. Now, his movies generally make... It's kind of weird. There's a weird gap there where his movies either make $20 million or less or $40 million or more. And since this is at $12 million already, it's looking like, who knows, this one might get to like 40, 45.
I mean, it's a good movie.
That could help.
I very much enjoyed it.
It's only at 300 screens at the moment.
Yeah.
Moonrise Kingdom topped out at 900, mm-hmm. not even 1,000. Fantastic Mr. Fox, 2,300 screens. Moonrise Kingdom made double the amount of money of Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
So who knows what's going to happen with Grand Budapest Hotel. $40 million is actually looking like it could be a good upside for a good old Wes Anderson, whose movies, do any of his other movies have a budget? Moonrise Kingdom only cost him $16 million to make. Darjeeling Limited doesn't have a budget there. So you can bet this one cost him about 15.
Yeah.
15 to make or so. No. It helps if these movies are good. Right?
Correct. It usually does.
It usually helps if they're good for them to end up making their money. So what did you think of the old Grand Budapest Hotel?
I quite enjoyed it.
Oh, did you really?
Actually, yeah. I was a big fan of Mr. Fiennes.
The of the Ray character.
Yes, of the Ray.
Not Ralph.
Of the Ray variety.
Yeah. Why is that spelled Ralph?
I have no idea.
What the hell is all that?
I have no idea. Dude, it's confused me for so long.
It's so weird, right?
And it makes no sense.
No, none whatsoever. Yeah, right. So yeah, tell people, what was it, more than just Ralph Fiennes that got you into?
Yeah, I mean it's Wes Anderson, so you know it's an ensemble flick.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
Wes Anderson, whether they're in the movie for, you know, 50 minutes or 5 seconds, you know, there is this pantheon of characters,
yeah,
and people that he draws from.
And he has been adding to over the years, you
and
know?
Taking away from, you know.
Yeah, sometimes people just aren't available, or there aren't roles for them, or you see them come back, like, oh, I haven't seen that guy in forever. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's got that. If you like Wes Anderson movies.
Oh, I mean, it's totally a Wes Anderson movie.
It's totes Wes.
From the second it starts, I mean, you know, just the decorations, the tone of the film, the everything, it's very Wes Anderson.
Yes, absolutely, I agree. You know what? It's... You know what does, I think, set it apart from his other movies? Royal Tenenbaums, which is... That's when it made the most money.
Yes.
$50-something million. Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore, Bottle Rocket, Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, even most recent Moonrise Kingdom. Of all these movies, this one is by far the darkest. You know, like, it gets violent.
Oh, it
surprisingly violent at times.
Hilariously violent
at
times.
Well, yeah, at times mostly for comedic effects, but still, like, I was surprised when... So, whoa, where's...
Yeah.
There's bloodshed in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Dude, Willem Dafoe gets nasty.
Willem Dafoe is, yeah. He's a nasty character. Every time he pops up on the screen, it's like, oh, boy.
I love that fake underbite, I guess, that he's doing the whole time.
Yeah, it's like, looks like a bulldog. He's got a bulldog face.
Yep.
Yeah, it's strange character. Really good. Really fun. It's a fun, interesting movie. The darkness kind of interested me. Like, whoa, that's an interesting way to grow within the style that he's now... known for.
Oh, man. There was such a lightness and airiness about the movie, too.
Well, it's like it's like those cupcakes that you see in there. You know, they're so delicately made and almost pretentiously put together. All those movies are like that. So the point of pretension is how they're constructed. You know, and even when it gets to, like, oh, here's a big action chase scene, it's like, oh, but it's done with, like, the charm of almost a stop-motion sequence.
Yeah.
Or, you know, here's a cardboard cutout of, you know, I mean, come on, Wes, what? It's cute and all, but how are you supposed to take this all 100% seriously? You can't, you know.
Oh, but you have to.
But
what he's portraying on the screen makes you take it seriously.
It does. I guess it's like those cupcakes. So they look ridiculous, but then when you eat it, you say, "Oh man, that's actually it's quite good. That's quite tasty."
It is.
So, yeah, I thought the movie was quite tasty. I did. You mentioned it off the show. I wanted to mention it on the show anyway. It was funny that you said it. Mm-hmm. There really is something about watching Ralph Fiennes curse.
Oh, no, dude, seriously?
There's something about it.
And especially, like, this character that he was playing. You know, he's very, very refined.
I see what you did there. He's very Ralph Fiennes.
Oh, exactly. He's very refined. And, you know, uppity and proper. And, you know, he's explaining all these things in this very nice and, you know, very proper manner. And then at the end of it all just breaks down. And he just ends up, you know, saying fuck a lot.
And resorting to violence and things like that. There's one part where someone's explaining something to him. And the camera's cutting back and forth when people are talking. And, like, someone says something and it cuts to him. And it's just him long enough to go, those fuckers. And then everyone in the theater laughed. Everyone was like, it's funny the way he said it and the way it was cut in there.
It's Ralph Fiennes in a funny mustache saying curse words.
Yeah, it's like, oh, man, that's Voldemort's crazy. So definitely. How many 800-something screens right now?
Oh, and I loved the...
Because it's near everybody, your people. 304 screens,
the Society of the Crossed Keys. Everybody with their silly coattails.
The Society of the Crossed Keys is awesome. Color-coded. When you see them at the end, it's like, oh, it's like a pack of M&Ms.
Exactly.
That's cute with some facial hair thrown in. Only 300 screens, so it's gonna expand in the next few weeks. It's going to get up to at least 1,000... making over 5 million at 6.7 million, having a weekend of over 5 million on 300 screens, that's definitely encouraging enough for them to want to expand more.
Mm-hmm.
So, people, keep an eye out. Local listings. Check your local listings because, you know, we got people listening all over the place, man.
Yeah,
like here, it's only playing on Winter Park. And that's it.
Did you notice?
It's only playing at Winter Park.
Did you notice the way the screen was cut for the entire movie?
Thank you for bringing that up, Drew.
It took me like 15 minutes, and I was like, wait a minute.
Why is this happening?
No.
Or that something is happening?
Well, no. I was just sitting there, and I was going, wait a minute. What? Did that just... hang on a second. How long has it been like that for? Did I even notice?
Did you notice how it alternated?
Yeah.
Yes, the aspect ratio of the movie changes throughout. It starts with your traditional anamorphic, like, it's 2-3-1 or whatever, yeah. Right? And then, I was trying to pay attention to when it happened. I think I would figure it out, but I really wasn't keeping track of all the changes because I was, started watching the actual movie and got sucked into it. But I think it cut to that... that old school 4-3 ratio, whenever it went to all this stuff, all the very fine stuff, which was in the 1930s.
Yeah.
Because that's when they did exhibition back then and shot stuff on film. That's how they used to shoot all on 4-3. Widescreen didn't come about until like the 40s, I think. And back then, widescreen was kind of a gimmick, like 3D or movies with sound, movies with color. Now in like wide, super wide Cinerama, duper screenoscope. And then now that, it evolved into now we all have screens that are TV screens that are widescreen, which is, I think, the nicest way to. Anyway, but that's why. I think that. So they had to, open up the curtains for the movie and, have everything blown up wide open. And then whenever it was in its, the 2-3 anamorphic ratio, there's, that big blackness, all around it. And then when it would cut to the 4-3, it would fill up the whole top and bottom of the screen. I was like, oh, shit, they actually need the bottom of the screen for this, which is very interesting. I mean, Wes, I get it. It's arty. It's cool. I dig it. I really dig the experimentation like that. Who's gonna fucking notice outside of people might have been like, why does the screen keep changing?
So no,
were they turning the camera sideways? Do they think it's like people when they record with their phone like that instead of like this, instead of sideways? I don't know. Was it worth it? Is what I'm asking. Was it worth it? I dropped my pen.
Awesome.
But Grand Budapest Hotel. People, check it out in theaters. It's definitely worth checking out the movie.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's one of Wes's better films.
One of his better films, constantly changing aspect ratio aside. Whatever you think about that. All right. But that's not even the top five.
No. Coming in number five this week, God's Not Dead.
What?
Had a weekend gross of $8.56 million.
Huh?
Sam's total budget of... Eh.
What are you talking about? God's Not Dead.
It's some weird Kevin Sorbo movie.
Oh, it's this weird Kevin Sorbo movie. That's right. This is one where I think we mentioned this actually a few weeks ago when we were talking about Christian exploitation movies of 2014. Yeah. Apparently, like 11 or 14 of these movies are coming out this year. Like a whole lot of these faith-based, I call them Christian exploitation films will be coming out. So this one is one where it's definitely, it's about faith and religion and being a Christian. And $8.5 million for a movie that had zero marketing outside of the religious sector. I guess it's good, unless it's another one of these things where a bunch of churches bought movie tickets.
And we just don't know about it?
Yeah, we just, the information's out there and we're just not bothering to check it out because we didn't even really know this movie was coming out, know what I mean? I mean, Kevin Sorbo. I like Hercules. Actually, I don't like Hercules.
No, me neither.
I was going to say, I like Hercules as much as the next guy, but if you're the next guy and you don't like Hercules, then I guess that sentence makes sense. I like Hercules as much as the next guy.
No, I
don't like Hercules either. I still don't want to see God's Not Dead.
Mm-hmm,
starring Kevin Sorbo. There's another one, I think, coming out with Dean Cain. Oh, this is the same one.
That's the same one.
So, Kevin, the power team of Kevin Sorbo and Dean Cain. That's what I'm talking about.
Hercules and Superman.
Now, if those two guys were in the number four movie, then we might be onto something.
The number four movie this week, 300 Rise of an Empire, weekend gross at $8.6 million, total gross at $93.75 on a budget of $110.
Why wasn't Kevin Sorbo and Dean Cain in 300 Rise of an Empire?
Because they're both in their 50s, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe because they're waiting for
geriatric 300?
300.
These guys aren't muscular at all.
300. Fall of a toupee. Fall of a hairstyle. This movie's made $195 million internationally. So it's at $289 total.
Oh, God damn. So assuming it's going to be another one.
So there's going to be that 303. Hope you guys are ready for it. Well, let's see, international folks. Shout out to our international listeners.
I think I guess that we've learned that choke sex in action movies is just okay. I guess it's fine. People enjoy it.
We should more movies should
more
have.
Choke sex in action movies.
Maybe if there was more choke sex in the next movie, then it would be doing a little better.
All right.
The number three movie.
Oh yeah, there should be more choke sex.
Yeah,
in the
not
in
the next 300. I mean, like if there's more choke sex in the number three movie, then maybe the number three movie would be doing pretty good.
Correct. And the number three movie would be Mr. Peabody and Sherman. Mm-hmm. Weekend gross of $11.7 million. Total gross of 81 on a budget of 145. It could use some choke sex.
Definitely needed some more choke sex. No, I mean, I haven't seen the movie, but nope. I assume there is none in it.
Well, with it being probably a rated PG. Animated least. Family film, I would assume that there would be little to zero choke sex in it.
$102 million internationally, $183 million worldwide.
It needs
for,
to make more money.
Peabody and Sherman, $145 million budget, tack on another $100 at least for marketing, $250. It needs at least another $100 just to break even there theatrically. It'll get there. How long have it been out for 3 weeks now?
Yep.
It'll get there. It'll be fine. I wouldn't worry about it.
All right. Well, coming in number two this week, mm-hmm. A movie that I kind of want to see but didn't have the chance to, Muppets yeah, Most Wanted.
Maybe we'll make this one up this week somehow. We gotta,
yeah, I'd probably not do this weekend. It's another packed one.
Well, you know what? Go screw yourself.
Weekend gross to $16.5 million, same as a total budget of 50.
Good old Muppets Most Wanted. The last Muppets movie opened up on a Wednesday because it was like right around the Thanksgiving holiday. Mm-hmm. They did that whole thing, yeah. Even then, doing that, it had an opening Friday of like $12 million. This one having an opening weekend of $16 million, not as much as the last Muppets movie. Slightly disappointing for the folks over at Disney. But then again, it's a Muppets movie, so it's going to... It's going to make its money. And $50 million really doesn't cost that much in the long run, considering how much movies cost these days for
Seriously.
The most part. Right? And this will make, $65, $70 million total, probably, maybe, hopefully. Knock on wood. I do want to see it. It's pretty well reviewed.
Yeah.
The last one had strong reviews. People went gaga over the last Muppets
movie.
Well,
the last one was really good.
Yeah. People are like, this one's good. It's not as good as the last one.
Well,
it's still
it's not
good.
Jason Segel.
Yeah. And it's also... The last one had the benefit of, not being a Muppets movie for a long time. So
no, exactly.
It was kind of like, oh, yeah, cereal, this is fun and fresh.
Well, and that was the point of the movie, too.
And they tied that into the point of the movie, right? Yeah. They've been gone forever. Now this is more like, now here's just a Muppets movie. Things are come and go in cycles, right? So yeah. I guess maybe in 10 years we'll be back to the point where we're getting things like Muppet Treasure Island where it's like, it's not very good.
Yeah, probably.
Actually, I kind of like Muppets Christmas Carol. Although there's a lot of heavy reliance on Rizzo the Rat, when they have plenty of good characters ready. But anyway, still here we go. So, Muppets Most Wanted, we'll see eventually. What's number one movie?
No, number one movie is a movie that I hopefully will never see.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Drew. I got us tickets for us tonight. We're going.
Weekend gross $56 million.
Right after this,
total
we're
going to go. Budget of 85.
Yeah. We're going to go check this out.
Definitely saw a lot of... young females at the movie theater last Friday at the theater
in the lobby.
There are lots of groups of females. I have a feeling that was part of that $56 million.
Yes there were. Yeah, definitely, for sure. I mean, it's worldwide bestseller from the international bestseller type. That's what it said in the trailer.
Sweet.
All right, like Muppets, we didn't see this one. Unlike the Muppets, we didn't want to see this one.
I do not care to see this movie.
And it's not like the reviews are like, oh man, this is a great movie.
It looks like one of these fucking City of Bones things.
Right, exactly.
Starring Phil Collins' daughter.
It's actually slightly better reviewed than most of those movies. According to the Rotten Tomato, the rating, it's like... It's like in the 40s, 40% approval. And I didn't check any of the actual reviews, but I'm sure they were pretty like, they're all like, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Charlene Woodley, she's all right, I guess.
She is. I mean, we just saw some weird trailer with her in some sort of cancer love story.
Which I
thought was a very strange move. It's like, I'm going to do this weird Hunger Games / City of Bones type movie, and now, feel good cancer. Love story comedy thing.
Feel good, but kind of make him weep because she's like, I'm dying. I'm a hand grenade.
I'm gonna
go
explode.
Off. I'm gonna t- sick of everyone in my awake, and I don't want to take you with me. Cause I remember that part?
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
Like,
yeah,
oh, that's so sad. She's so cognizant of her disease. She's dying. Yeah, it is. The whole movie's just Shailene Woodley with short hair and one of those plastic oxygen tube things. Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I'd be like, yeah, guy, that wouldn't stop me either.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't stop me. Yeah, just no.
Just a plastic tube thing. I mean, yeah, we can work around that easily.
Seriously. I can find some fun things to do with that plastic tube.
Whoa, hey, come on now. This is a family fucking show here. Not a family fucking show.
Excuse me, Chris.
Rewind that. Hold on. Quiet. We're going to edit that part out. Shh. I need an edit break here. Okay, coming back in.
All right.
I added all that stuff about fucking families. That could have got us in trouble.
That could have gotten us in a lot of trouble.
Do we have any... Is there any sangria around here or anything?
No, I think we drank all that earlier. That was a, you know, that was a big old jug of sangria, bro. I took a nice long nap afterwards.
Oh, we're back to there. Yeah, we're start, all right. So let's get ready to start the show. The Netflix Randomizer 9000. All right, let's see what's coming out on DVD this week. We got, I don't know, Chris.
Why don't you tell me what's coming out on DVD this
week?
We
got Delivery Man. The remake of the French Canadian, yeah, Starbucks comedy, Vince Vaughn, Sperm VV. Bank, 500 Children, Meaning of Life.
Meaning of Life? What are you talking about?
The Great Beauty is the movie that won the most recent, the 2014 Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film. It's from Italy. It's about a guy who's like, he's in Italy, he's an older dude, and he's like, I'm gonna party.
Woo!
And there's a little movie called Wolf of Wall Street's coming out on TV. So I don't know, people might want to check that one out.
Word. Maybe a little bit. You think?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe just a little bit.
So what's coming out in theaters? Sure.
Coming out in theaters this week, we have Noah. Darren Aronofsky's Noah.
I want this movie to
be awesome.
I want it to be awesome. I feel that it. I have a feeling it's going to be like good at best. Maybe not that good overall. You never know. No one's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be commercially successful because Aronofsky took his clout with Black Swan and he could have like made. A blockbuster. I mean, he was attached to Wolverine. He could have made a Wolverine movie, and that would have made a bunch of money, and he could have made, you know, kept going on.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like, no, actually, I want to make Noah.
Hell yeah.
Because no one else wanted to touch this before, and this is what I want to make now, you know?
Because I'm Darren Aronofsky, and I'm crazy.
Yeah, so it's a daring move for him. So I wanted to make a lot of money to reward him for, you know, making a crazy move like that. But then again, I feel like it's not going to... It's not going to make that much money. It costs them like $100 to make.
I have a feeling this is going to be another one of those. I think it's going to be like a lot like The Fountain, where the movie is going to be freaking amazing. It's going to be like the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. And the whole rest of the world's going to be like, nope.
No.
This is garbage.
That'd be a shame.
And I'm just going to be like, what? Are you not watching? What? Are we not seeing the same movie here?
Apparently not. the problem with that is The Fountain costs him $30 million.
Yeah.
Noah, $139. So
I mean, I just want to find out. I mean, I've done a little bit of research. I try not to get a lot out of, you know, what this movie's going
to
be about.
Yeah, yeah. Try to stay away from the details of the movie itself. Yeah.
But, I mean, I have heard reports something about, like, there might be, like, monsters. And maybe some... demons or something.
Yeah, I don't know about the demons. Like, there's definitely, I've heard how, like, they came up with what they imagined would have been prehistoric versions of animals that we would recognize now, but still looking different and crazier and bigger and more intense.
Yeah.
So I think there might be stuff like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, that sounds, I don't know, man, it sounds weird.
I mean, if it's done right, I'm down, but it leaves me a bit concerned, that's all.
We're going to find out this weekend.
And also coming out this weekend, the new Schwarzenegger flick with Sabotage.
Sweet! Written and directed by David Ayers.
Correct.
Ayers.
Ayer, A-Y-E-R.
He's the guy who wrote Training Day.
Mm-hmm.
He also wrote and directed Harsh Times with Christian Bale, and then he wrote and directed one other movie that was also sort of revolved around the LA police thing. I forgot which one it is. It's escaping me right now. And then he did
End of Watch.
Then he did End of Watch.
Yeah.
And like up to that point, all of his movies involving the police force and all his portrayals of police were always like, well, these, a lot of these guys are corrupt, and they're just as crazy as criminals. That was the point of a lot of his other stuff. And then he was like, well, within the watch, I want to make a movie where the police are the good guys. 100%. There's no...
Yeah, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, they're the good guys. They're doing a horrible job that they're, you know, they're making the best of it. And it's a great movie. It's a fantastic movie. It surprised a lot of people in how good it was. He's following that up with this crazy Sabotage movie, which now it's...
Well, now this looks now, like a mix.
It does look like a mix. It looks like they're going against the... It's like, so is he DEA? No, he's not DEA. Is he DEA? Who's Schwarzenegger's team? Who are they working for? Are they cops? Are they feds? Or are they California force? See, I don't think that's clear.
I mean,
clear.
It says members of an elite DEA task force.
Okay, so they're DEA, all DEA. So they're feds. So
yeah, they're all feds.
And they're doing a lot of drug busts, and it brings them head-to-head with the cartels, and there's, like, money missing.
You know, a lot like End of Watch, you know, where everything's going... It's a regular day. We're doing our job. Mexican cartel, everything goes to hell.
They do end up running into the Mexican cartels. Yeah, it's a big deal.
That's the kind of shit that's actually happening right now.
They're cutting off heads, they're on the streets. It's crazy.
Yep.
So Schwarzenegger, back from his stint of politicalness, where kind of did some
shit. Had the whole governor thing.
For 8 years. Got reelected. Mm-hmm. Got elected twice. So good for him. But I'm glad he's back to acting. I'm glad he took a break and now he's back to acting, because now I can appreciate him more, even though he's an older fella now. Now he's in his 60s or whatever, but still, I'm down with it. Down with some Schwarzenegger action. And this guy that is this dude in the movie, because it's him, Terrence Howard, Sam Worthington, this other guy, whatever his name is, some chick, and then that giant dude, Joe Mangiello.
Yeah, whatever.
The gigantic guy.
With the big beard.
He was in the running for Man of Steel for a minute there.
How was he?
And then he was in the running for Batman. Bless you. One more time. There you go.
Interesting. Yeah. I've seen what he was. He played some small role on How I Met Your Mother.
Did he really?
Yeah. He was.
I think he was on True Blood.
Oh, was he?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's where he started getting his little following there. And now he's in this with all these other people. So good for them. Good for him. See how it goes. Between Noah and Sabotage, see, that's the thing. Noah is PG-13, I believe, and Sabotage is R.
Both going to be awesome.
So, financially speaking, that's a tough one. I mean,
Noah should do better just because of PG-13.
Yeah, Noah's going to do better, but I'm thinking, would it be the number one movie? Divergent is going to make about $25 million next week. Will Noah make $25 million next weekend?
I hope so. I hope Noah makes at least a splash. I've been reading too many Box Office Mojo headlines, dude. I swear. Starting to rot my brain.
Okay. They're just going to...
Noah floods out competition.
Oh, God. Stop it. For the love of God, stop it. Okay, here we go. Let's take a break. We obviously need to take a break here. My beer is empty. And
I'm starting to get loopy.
Drew's getting the loopies, the Fruit Loops. Drew's getting Fruit Loopy. So I got a little song here for you guys. Y'all know, if you've been listening to this show for a while by now, you know that I'm a big fan of Black Dynamite.
Dynamite,
exactly. And I may have played this in the past. I don't know. I don't care. So here we go. Black Dynamite theme song. I hope you guys... get down your bad selves while you listen to this. Get funky. Go ahead. Don't forget. Don't fear nodding your head, tapping your feet to the beat. Who cares what people are looking? They're just jealous of you having a better time than them. Know what I mean?
No, I don't. I'm always having a great time.
Yeah, and then I'm saying other people are always staring at you having a great time, jealous of the fact that you're having such a better time.
No, I don't think they're jealous.
Okay. Thanks, dude. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Okay. Well, there we go. Back to my theme song. I'll be right back.
I want to tell you a story. about a friend I've had. He's a mean motherfucker and he's super bad. So grab onto your seats and hang on tight while I tell you a story about Black Dynamite. Wherever he walks, he withers the grass. King Kong steps aside when his bad is paid. So when you see him, don't have shit to say. With a shovel, we talk. He's doing what he do. He's feeling like he feel. He's killing who we want to. So you know that that is real. Mama always told me there'd be days like this. Better watch them politicians trying to sweep your niggas dead.
And she told me to.
So you know he's dynamite. He's killing in the street. He's killing who he be. Flames at night when he's in sight.
He's dynamite.
He's the kind of brother that comes through town. If your mouth right, that your ass can.
Use kung fu when it want to. Have sex when you please. When the world hurt the children, brought the world to its knees. A mastermind plan, a cracker had to cook. He killed his brother Jimmy, so he killed them dirty crooks. Cause he stuck it to the man.
How are we preaching?
It's the children that he teaches.
To do no wrong, to do all right.
We won the fight with dynamite. He's pillaging the streets. He's killing who he meets. Flames at night when he's inside.
What's up? It's your boy Stone the Terrible.
It's your boy, the Black David Hasselhoff from Forget That Yo Radio. You are now listening to Cinema Crespo Diso,
the number one show for movie reviews. Now back to the show.
Welcome to the Crespo Show.
Welcome to the second half of episode 63. Is that right? That's what I've been saying.
Yeah.
That's what I've been calling it from the beginning, episode 63 of Cinema Crespo Diso. Thank you for listening. Thank you for hanging out. Thank you for sticking around. You know, there's benefits to the show when you stick around. When you listen to the end, sometimes you might get something. For example, shout-outs to Caleb Stillwater, Oklahoma, representing.
Whoa,
and shout outs to Simi, Huntington Beach, California.
Whoa.
At the very end of the last episode, I was like, hey, you know, if you're still listening, shoot me an email with this the subject line, with your address, and we'll send you something.
Something's going to happen.
These two guys sent an email, so you know what? We will be sending you something soon. As a matter of fact, I'll let you know right now on the show that we'll be sending you, you'll be getting the first stickers of our new run of stickers. We're up in the quality. They're going to be even nicer. What design are we going with? Do we decide on a design?
I think we're going to do
Are we doing some knuckle tat?
I think so.
Some sweet knuckle tat stickers. All right, so we'll be sending some sweet knuckle tat stickers, guys. Hope you enjoy them. Give us a little bit of time there. We've got to actually make the stickers first. But that's going to happen. So why don't you know, shout outs. Stillwater, Huntington Beach. It's coming.
Eventually.
Cinema Crespo is there. We'll be coming in sticker form.
It all depends how busy I am this week.
ChrisCrespo.com. Already mentioned. Go there for reviews, op-eds, back episodes of Cinema Crespo, so Netflix and some pics of the week, stuff like that. You can also see our link to the show Instagram, which is Cinema Crespo. So, and the Twitter. Well, my Twitter is at I am Chris Crespo. The show is at Crespo. So email the show at cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. Drew, where can people get you online?
At antihero419 on Twitter and Instagram.
There you go. So hit us up, folks. Rate us and review us on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Same with Stitcher Radio, because we're on there as well. Okay. Well, let's get the second half of the show started here. We saw some interesting movie trailers this weekend. I want to talk about a trio of movie trailers that we saw. First, there was this one. Let's talk about this. I don't know where. Here's that thing written down here somewhere. Organization, folks. All right, the Signal. Right now, if you're listening, just pause the show for a second. Go to YouTube. Pull up your YouTube app on your phone or on your computer, wherever you're at. You know, and look up the trailer for the Signal and make sure it's the 2014 the Signal and not the one from like. A few years ago. Okay, here we go. And go.
Man, I hope they're having fun watching this trailer. It's pretty good.
It is a good trailer.
It is crazy. The first time I saw it, I was just like, what? I'm still confused about what exactly is going on.
All right, guys. Welcome back. Hope you enjoy the trailer for The Signal with Larry Fishburne in a weird suit.
Yes.
He's in the suit the whole time.
Good old Morpheus.
Morpheus is like...
He's all scared in that suit.
He's like, I'm scared in the suit. We don't know. When do you remember when you heard the signal? So yeah, it's like some dude, he's a kid, he's a teenager, likes to hang out, run around the woods with his friends and stuff and live a teenager life, but then he heard some sort of signal, and then things happened.
It looks like he got like psychic powers or something. People are floating in the air, shit's exploding.
It could be like just a slow motion explosion, so it looks like people are floating, but really it's just a shot of people flying around in slow motion from a blast. Because it's a trailer. It could be a little
could be anything.
There's like one part where, yeah, like some person got like sucked into the sky, it looked like almost. I was like, so when you hear the signal, like, or the aliens, or like,
slow motion.
What's going on? Yeah, so. But it's an interesting trailer.
Yeah.
Pretty well cut little trailer. And I do have a problem with it being called The Signal. Because there was a movie called The Signal from a few years ago.
Not very good.
No, the movie itself was okay. It was a low budget indie horror film where the movie's in three sections. And it's actually three sections directed by three different people. But the three sections still tell one story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're still connected together. And there's like some, I forgot exactly what happens, but you know what? It's sort of like a zombie movie where a signal goes out there and everyone hears the signal, or people that do hear it, they get turned into zombies or something like that. Or it's a weird little movie. So I mean, it's not that hard to do a little bit of research. IMDb. I'm going to call my movie The Signal. Go to IMDb and punch it in there. And oh, there's already another movie called The Signal.
Well, I like it. Mine's going to be better.
My signal's going to be better than that signal. I mean, come on, guys. Anyway. So pretty cool trailer, right? Another trailer that we saw, the entire trailer, the whole time, was Tom Hardy in a car.
Yes.
And it's like he's having people, conversations with people on his, like, Bluetooth setup speaker.
He's talking, no.
Yeah.
I'm fired, but I'm trying to do the right thing.
I'm trying to do the right thing while he's driving. No, I'm doing the right thing. Like, what? He's like, I'm going to be home soon. Well, I don't know, his family.
Well, he's not coming home or something.
Right.
We're not coming home. That is one fateful car drive.
Yeah,
whatever it is.
It almost, there's a lot of movies these days where it almost feels like it's a fake movie. Like in the trailer for a fake movie.
Yeah.
And like someone came up with this.
Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
In a car.
Tom Hardy in a car at all times. Just different angles of him driving and close-ups of him and it's just his face and... He's just making mysterious comments.
Well, maybe it's supposed to be. I mean, during the trailer for this, I mean, the entire time it was like, this will redefine your notions of cinema. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, the whole the blurbs.
And I'm all like, it's Tom Hardy in a car. I've seen this movie. I believe it's called Phone Booth.
Yeah, it was Phone Booth. Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't very good.
Well, that was Jonathan. That was Schumacher. Joel Schumacher. this movie, Lock, Tom Hardy is Lock.
Yes.
L-O-K-E. Go ahead and check out that trailer.
L-O-C-K-E.
L-O-C-K-E. What did I say?
L-O-K-E.
L-O-C-K-E.
Loke.
Loke. L-O-C-K-E. Go ahead and check out that trailer, guys. It's pretty, I think it's kind of funny, actually. This one is written and directed by Stephen Knight.
Okay.
That's not the guy who played Newman on Seinfeld.
Okay.
That's Wayne Knight. Stephen Knight wrote...
He's Wayne's brother.
He's Wayne's brother, and he wrote Dirty Pretty Things,
uh-huh.
which is was last week's Netflix and the Pick of the Week. And he also wrote Eastern Promises.
David Cronenberg's
Eastern Promises. The guy's good. Stephen Knight is good. So, I mean, it could be a crackling good story. It could be good. Who knows? Maybe Tom Hardy is great. Maybe that's the beauty of the movie. He's compelling the whole time, just driving a car.
Maybe Tom Hardy's great. Tom Hardy is great.
Okay, reframe me. Maybe Tom Hardy is great in this movie.
Okay, there we go.
Seen, we haven't seen the movie yet, so I haven't seen. So
I mean...
Yeah, he is pretty great.
Bronson, though. Case in point.
Bronson's incredible.
Case in point.
I'd watch a movie with just Bronson in the car.
Well, we are. You are seeing Bronson in the car.
Yeah, but I mean Bronson, though. Bronson, Branson, Raven Bronson. Not Tom Hardy with the beard. Be like, I gotta do the right thing. Whatever he keeps saying over and over. All right, then third trailer we saw. What was it again? Somewhere. All right, this one looks crazy. Under the Skin.
Yes.
Now, all right, now this is interesting. This is pretty much. I mean, I've seen the title around, like floating around here and there from like the festival circuit and stuff. Never really investigated it. It was just one of those things where I was waiting for the really come around. You informed me to a little bit to my surprise that you already knew about this movie in some way. Please tell the people how this movie came on your own personal radar.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I was doing, how interwebs things happen. I actually found out about this movie a couple months ago because it was all over the geekdom that Scarlett Johansson was finally going to do Full Frontal in something.
Ayo.
So all the fanboys were geeking out about getting to see her all nakified.
Getting to see what Ryan Reynolds got thoroughly familiar with and bored by.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Uh-huh. And then I saw a different trailer for this movie. Maybe like 2 or 3 months ago.
Like online or?
Yeah, online somewhere. Okay. It wasn't anywhere near as crazy and sci-fi-y as the trailer that we just saw.
Yeah, go ahead, go online, people, and I guess be aware there's another trailer out there, but try to find the most recent trailer for Under the Skin.
It's a better trailer, definitely.
And we'll be here when we get back. Okay, go ahead and go. Yeah.
So really, one of the blurbs for this trailer isn't we finally have an heir to Kubrick.
Ooh, yeah.
And I'm sitting there going like, what? That is.
Welcome back. I hope you guys enjoyed that crazy trailer. Yes, Drew. They make a direct reference to Kubrick, an heir to Kubrick. That's an incredibly huge and bold statement. Is
yes,
it because it gets a little weird sci-fi-y, like 2001?
Probably.
Plus, it's like a lot of shots of the cameras being pulled back. It's like,
yeah.
It's emotionally cold and distant while you're seeing horrible things happen. Yeah,
probably.
That's
very Kubrick.
Yeah, I mean. I guess that's a lot of pressure. It's putting a lot of pressure on a movie when you're throwing a name out there like Stanley Kubrick, who's considered to be by many to be pretty much the greatest filmmaker ever.
Yeah.
Definitely the filmmaker with the highest IQ ever.
Legend
has an IQ
that
in,
is
like
undoubted.
In the 200s, which is...
Yeah. Well, that's why...
Like, I would imagine someone's brain would explode if their IQ is that high. There's just too much going on.
It tried to. I mean, look at the shit that poured out onto film.
Yeah, sure. And then he did die in his 50s.
Yeah.
But to this movie, this one's done by Jonathan Glazer, who did Sexy Beast, which
great
is
movie.
Fantastic, fantastic movie. And then he did another movie, which I forgot. It gets name dropped in the trailer, but it's also pretty good. Sexy Beast is like incredible.
Sexy Beast is awesome.
So yeah, I'm down for this one. This one looks great.
Oh yeah, it looks crazy. And I mean, you really can't tell in the trailer, but word is that ScarJo's like an alien in this movie.
Well, Alien ScarJo versus Juicer Cogburn. Juice to God, we're in versus the world here. Yeah, she's apparently some sort of alien, and I think she's an alien seductress of human men.
Love it.
So, yeah, good way to die, if you ask me.
Yeah. I can think of worse ways.
Alien snoo snoo. So, yeah, go see. check out the trailer. Movie looks interesting. I think it comes out like
soonish.
Yeah, like April or something. So, man, if it really comes out that soon.
Yeah.
Exciting. All right, here we go, Drew. I had a game set up in case we had a guest. We're trying to work on a guest, kind of fell through. So it's a little harder than your typical sparring round.
Okay.
So, you know. Here we go. Just run through. Quiz show. We got the inspiration from the poster.
Okay.
Random movie trivia quiz show. Here we go. Just random movie trivia.
All right. Ray, be with me.
Not easy. Ray, be with you. You're very Ray-fined. Number one. What 1990 box office flop? That's part of the question. Was the first film to star both Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan? 1990, box office flop. First movie to have
Tom Hanks
and Meg Ryan.
There was the one, but that one was not a flop.
Totally stuck. Totally killed.
Well, it can't be Sleepless in Seattle.
No, they're not flopping. Sure.
It can't be that.
Also, did not come out in 1990.
Yeah. Well, me and time are not very tight, so.
Me and time.
I have no idea.
Joe versus the Volcano.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty bad.
Number two, the 1995 movie Clueless is a loose adaptation of what? 1915 Jane Austen novel.
Don't know
is incorrect. The answer is Emma. Yes.
All right.
I think at least maybe it spit out a Pride and Prejudice or something. Yeah, sensibility.
No. Nope. Don't care.
Number three. Who is the only person ever to be nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, and Best Screenplay? Obviously for one movie. That's right. But what have you been in? Don't gotta give me the movie. Just if you give me the actor, that'd be good enough.
All those things.
Yes. One person for one movie was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Screenplay. Even give you a little hinty hint that won't even matter. The only one he won was for Best Screenplay.
No idea.
Orson Welles for nice. Citizen Kane. You know, traditionally considered one of the greatest
movies ever. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Number four. What 1985 film was the first Disney animated movie to get a PG rating? Everything else before that was G rated. 1985 Disney film. Animated.
I don't know. The Aristocats.
Oh! Close, but no. Black Cauldron.
Yeah, I could see that being PG.
Yeah, a little darker.
Yeah, it was a little dark.
A little darker, yeah. So I was trying to emphasize the year, 85. You know, thinking mid-80s Disney, you know, predating.
Like I said, me and time, dude.
What? Well, then maybe this won't help. What 1986 movie used the tagline, "Be afraid, be very afraid"? It's also a line from the movie. They just use it for the tagline. What 1986 movie used the tagline, "Be afraid, be very afraid"? This poor guy, he's 0 for 4. It's only a sparring round. I'll even give you a hint. How about I tell you who says the line in the movie?
Sure.
Gina Davis.
What?
In a scene where Jeff Goldblum's like, "Don't be afraid," to some girl. And Gina Davis says, "Oh, no, be afraid.
I got nothing.
Be very afraid," because Jeff Goldblum is turning into the fly. Here we go. Starring Leah Thompson and Tim Robbins, what was the first movie to be adapted from a Marvel comic series?
Leah Thompson, Tim Robbins?
Yes.
What?
I'll give you a hint. It was during when Lea Thompson was hot, both career-wise, and there's one scene in the movie where she's in her panties on the bed, and I can see why old Marty McFly could have some Oedipal issues.
Man, I got nothing, bro.
Let me give you another hint. It's Marvel and Lucasfilms. George Lucas. 80s. Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck.
Totes Howard.
Man, that was a weird movie.
That's a bad movie. Here we go. Number 7. What is the only Steven Spielberg movie? Not including his... he has a direct TV movie that he did back in the day. Not including that one. What is the only Steven Spielberg movie that was not scored by John Williams? Bonus point if you can tell me who did score the movie.
No idea who scored the movie.
Okay.
Not John Williams.
Yeah, the only one. I'll give you a hint. 80s. 80s Spielberg. Late 80s.
That doesn't really help me.
We cut some things out. I ain't no Tom Lincoln.
Yeah, nothing, bro.
The Color Purple. The Color Purple.
Didn't even know that was Spielberg.
Al Spielberg. Score was produced by Quincy Jones.
Of course.
Quincy Jones. Here we go. Number 8. The 1999 romantic comedy 10 Things I Hate About You. Remember that one?
Never saw it.
Is a loose adaptation of what Shakespeare comedy?
Seriously?
Seriously. The 1999 rom-com, 10 Things I Hate About You, starring, I believe, Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger?
Yeah.
Is a loose adaptation of what Shakespeare comedy?
I got nothing, bro. That's got to be really loose interpretation.
You can't even name a Shakespearean comedy? Like Titus Andronicus?
Yeah, nope.
Shakespearean scholars are laughing there because
I'm
that's
sure
not
they are.
It's not a comedy. Titus Andronicus is a horrible revenge tale. The Taming of the Shrew. You ever read The Taming of the Shrew?
Yeah,
it's a very misogynistic story actually about how some chick is really a bitch. She's up, and she's like, I'm an independent bitch. I'm a badass bitch, right? She's one of these chicks, right? And then some dude comes around and is like, I'll break her down. And then he breaks her down, and then it's supposed to be like, ha ha ha.
Uh huh.
That's some fucked up shit, man. It's misogynistic.
Yeah, well, I mean, dude, a lot of Shakespeare's kind of twisted.
I guess it is.
I mean, Hamlet, there's dead dads and ghosts walking around.
Hamlet goes ham.
Good Lear. I mean, King Lear. Oh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
King Lear Lears.
Yeah.
Hamlet goes
I mean,
ham.
Romeo and Juliet, they both die at the end.
Yeah.
Ha.
Suicide.
Ba-doom-ts. Yeah.
Yeah, double suicide.
Yeah.
Oh, I like all my stories then with the double suicide.
Of course.
All right, Drew. So far, you got nothing right. Number 9.
I'm just gonna keep going for that.
It seems that way. I don't know. I think
that's what I'm going for. I'm going for straight nil.
I think you're gonna get this one.
Awesome.
I'm pretty sure you have no option but to get this one.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. What 1997 Kevin Costner movie won 5 Razzies? Worst picture, worst actor,
Waterworld.
Worst director, worst screenplay,
Waterworld.
Worst original song. What 1997 Kevin Costner movie? I'll give you one more guess. You sure you want to see Waterworld?
Oh, really? Waterworld was 1997? Oh, man. It's awful. That movie was bad. The Postman.
The Postman was pretty awful.
I'm
going to give that one to you because, so you can get at least one right.
I was actually forced to see that in theaters.
Force. That's always the best way to see.
Well,
movies.
It was kind of
always the best way to see movies when you're forced.
Kind of forced. I mean, my mom was a postal worker, so she wanted to go see The Postman because she liked Kevin Costner. And man, it was not the movie that I guess she thought it was going to be.
Makes perfect sense. All right, finally, here we go. What 1980 movie held the record for most cars destroyed in a single film until it was surpassed by its own 1998 sequel. Bonus points if you can name the number of cars destroyed each.
Blues Brothers?
Blues Brothers is correct. Good job. Can you name how many cars were destroyed in Blues Brothers?
Over 200.
103.
Oh.
Can you name how many were destroyed in the sequel, Blues Brothers 2000?
Over 300.
104.
All right.
So there you go. You got two, yeah, you got the last two right there. Kind of helped you a little bit with the Postman one, but the Blues Brothers one, you're right on top of it. So good job, dude. And we won't mention that round over again.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Let's get into a couple of quick little movie stories here. I got some things that you may find interesting. How about we use a microphone? Hey, microphone, how's it going?
I mean, you can use it if you want to. I mean, if you actually want people to hear you. Yeah, I don't think you do.
Yeah, I've been debating that lately.
I really don't care if people hear me or not.
You want to hear the story about the one of those crazy Florida stories that happens not in Florida?
No, I don't.
Do you want to hear about the casting developments for the new Jurassic World? Or do you want to hear about what they're going to do with Paul Walker's role in Fast and Furious 7?
Ooh, Paul Walker. I want to know. I want to know how that's going to work.
Right, yeah.
I've been wondering that since the motherfucker blew up.
Did blow up. Universal announced that they are going to keep Walker's scenes in the movie, even though he only filmed about half of the character's role. According to the New York Daily News, at least four actors that match up with Walker's body size have been hired to help finish the film in place of him. CGI will then be used to map over their face with Walker's. Specifically, the report says, quote, they have hired four actors with bodies very similar to Paul's physique, and they will be used for movement and as a base. Paul's face and voice will be used on top using CGI.
Wow, they must have real good faith in their CGI capabilities. Yeah, yeah.
So that's going to be fun. That's actually going to be what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, so now it's going to be, ooh, is it real or CG Paul Walker?
Yeah.
You tell me.
Real Paul or fake Paul?
Yep.
Oh, that's going to be a fun drinking game.
Yeah, it is.
Real Paul, fake Paul. So that's how they're doing it. That kind of reminds me of The Crow.
Yeah.
They did
that as well.
Snapping a face on a person for one scene. That was like a big deal back then.
But that was one scene. Yeah, it was the first time it had to be done. Exactly. And they were just like, listen, if we don't have the... If this doesn't happen, then the movie's over.
Yeah.
We need to dump a bunch of money into this to make it happen so we actually have a movie.
50%. That's a lot of the role. They have to cut down as much as possible, I guess. But
still, of course.
Oh, my goodness. That's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to how they work around all that goodness. He seemed physically repulsed by the first story, so I'll save that one for last.
I wasn't physically repulsed.
No, you were just like, oh God, no.
I just don't care. I just don't care.
And then he threw up all over the table. It was gross. I was there. I saw it. Who's who in Jurassic Park?
I don't know. You tell me.
I will tell you. I'll tell you. They got a lot of the cast is now out for Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park 4, which is actually called Jurassic World. Directed by this fella, Kellen Trevorrow, who did Safety Not Guaranteed, past Netflix Pick of the Week. It's on Netflix still. It's pretty good. Good little sci-fi movie. Sort of sci-fi-ish. Very itty-bitty little bit of sci-fi. It's weird. When you watch that movie, you wouldn't really think to yourself, oh, yeah, this is the guy that's going to make the next Jurassic Park movie. This is the guy that's going to be the next, like, sci-fi, next big sci-fi blockbuster, you know? But he got the job somehow. And in Jurassic World, it's the movie set up where it's... The Jurassic Park, the theme park, is up and running. It's operational. They fixed everything. The island is secure. They get millions of visitors every year.
Sure, it's secure.
And then it breaks down while it's full of visitors and stuff.
Oh, sweet. So instead of just like five people getting trampled by dinosaurs, it's going to be like a million people getting trampled by dinosaurs?
Several thousand. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I think that's a fun idea, actually. I think it's
As long as, you know, at one point in time, like the velociraptors go like ham on a group of like German tourists or something.
Going ham! Second time you say going ham. Might have been the third ham reference on the show. Delicious, honey baked. Is it because he had that triple meat sandwich?
Oh, you mean
was there ham on there?
The one third of the triple meat sandwich.
Was there ham on there?
That's it was ham, pork, and steak.
You got all that meat on the brain. That's why. Okay, so the cast for Jurassic World: Chris Pratt.
Okay,
Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
Uh huh.
Yeah, a couple of big movies for this guy. Bryce Dallas Howard, daughter of Ron.
Okay.
All right. Vincent D'Onofrio,
Oh, good old Vinny D.
Good old Vinny D. So you can assume he's going to be some sort of bad guy, probably.
Yeah, he's probably going to be fat.
Some sort of a little creepy.
Yep, fat, creepy, old.
He's going to stand around weirdly.
And be fat.
Irfan Khan. He's a huge Hindi film star.
Okay.
And he was in Life of Pi. He was the older Pi that was telling the story.
Okay, very nice.
That guy. I think he was even in the Darjeeling Limited.
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah. B.D. Wong, the Asian doctor
The Asian guy from all the Law and Order stuff.
He's also in the first Jurassic Park.
Oh, really?
He's pretty much the only guy coming back.
Nice.
Yeah, that's their tenuous connection to the first one. And Omar Sy, who is, I don't think you've seen the movie, but I've seen on Netflix The Intouchables, that French movie.
Yeah.
Where the black dude, the African refugee guy, is helping the older French guy in the wheelchair, the handicapped dude. Omar Sy is the black fella.
Okay.
So he's going to be in the Jurassic World. He's also in X-Men, Days of Future Past. Nice. He plays Bishop.
Okay.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Name sounds amazing. According to this article, we know for a fact that Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum are all out.
Oh.
Jurassic Park comes to theaters June 12th, 2015. And they brought back Phil Tippett, legendary sci-fi, effects guy, Hollywood effects guy, Phil Tippett, who worked with Stan Winston on the original Jurassic Park effects stuff. So.
Oh, so we're going to have some practical effects up in this bitch?
Oh, yeah. I think even in the last Jurassic Park, when they were introducing more CG, there's still been a healthy mix of practical and CG. That first Jurassic Park, 94, yeah, that was actually a big deal with the CG in that movie.
Yeah.
I was like, this is the first time that we're using so much of it. But the practical stuff still looks fantastic, right?
Yes.
Hey, did you hear about what happened in a parking lot in Texas after showing of 300, Rise of an Empire? Any chance to hear about this?
No.
Texas man struck and killed by truck during argument about ending of 300, Rise of an Empire. Yep. Yeah, that face says it all, Drew. That face says it all.
What?
Family members say Michael Emerson, 23, was hit and killed by two men driving a Ford pickup truck early Monday as he argued outside the Silverado movie theater in Tomball, Texas.
Okay.
A 23-year-old Texas man was struck and killed by a pickup truck early Monday morning during an argument about the ending of 300 Rise of an Empire. He was a college student and movie buff, according to his family. Police have yet to find the suspects, described as two men driving a white Ford F-150 crew cab. Emerson and a group of friends went to watch a late screening Sunday of the movie at the theater. Afterwards, the men were talking about the film in the bathroom when a second group butted in with a differing opinion on whether the movie would have a sequel, a witness told the TV station. The confrontation moved outside, where Emerson verbally confronted the men as they got into their truck. The driver pumped the truck backwards in reverse, plowing into Emerson, who fell to the ground and later died at the hospital. Then the suspects took off.
Nice. Well, of course. So you hit somebody, then you run.
So, what do you think? Do you think there's going to be a sequel to 300?
Sure.
I'll kill you!
I'm sure you will. You've
see, doesn't make sense, does it?
You've threatened
how
me.
How does that argument worse. Even? Well, who cares about a sequel to 300? And they're gonna.
It makes no difference.
Even if it's like it sounds like even then when they backed up their truck and they hit the guy and he died, it's not like they wanted to kill the guy. It's not like cold blooded murder. They overreacted and it was a horrible mistake. Now the guy's dead, so you know, gotta find these guys and bring them up and then manslaughter charges and shit, right? At the very least.
Yeah, totally.
But it's like who gives a. Why are you arguing about this shit? Complete
they
strangers.
As far as I'm concerned, if that's what they feel they need to argue about, and this is the outcome, then better for everybody.
You think so?
Yes.
Makes me sad.
If people want to kill each other over if there's going to be movie sequels or not, then by all means do it, because those people don't need to be on the planet anyway.
Not even a good movie. 300 Rise of an Empire.
They shouldn't have even done the first sequel, let alone a second.
Right. This prequel, sequel, sidequel thing that they called a movie. You know, and it was really, I don't even know what the hell it was. It's kind of sad, isn't it? It's kind of sad. All right, here we go.
We're living, bro.
We got a couple of questions here. Actually, I got two questions from Rage Against Twit on Twitter. This first one, what is the greatest story ever told?
Isn't there a movie with that title?
Yeah, see, I thought that was the Jesus story, the whole Easter story. No. It's the greatest story ever told. It's a 70s Italian movie, yeah, I think, about the Jesus story. Yeah.
So that's what that is.
So the greatest story ever told is the Jesus story.
Yes.
All right, very good. His second question, been watching non-rated movies on Netflix. How can a movie be non-rated anyways? Laziness or arbitration?
Both. Or it's that weird, if it's like a TV movie or something, then it's technically it's like TVM, but...
That's a rating, though.
But that's
TVM is a rating.
That's a television rating, though. Most of those TVM movies, when you see them on Redbox or on the Netflix, they come up as NR, not rated.
Would they come up as NR?
Yeah.
They want to slap the TV in? That's interesting. Why not put the TV rating on that? They could just do that, right? Because those are just as effective in telling you if the movie or what you're about to watch is good for, you know, certain age range and stuff. They're very descriptive.
Yeah.
Like, I like watching HBO, and then it comes up, like, get the big N for nudity. I'm like, sweet.
Yep, exactly.
Game of Thrones coming through again.
Yep.
And then it's
thank you,
then it's
titties.
Then it's a floppy wiener.
Yeah, like, well.
Oh, damn it.
South Park did an episode about that.
Why is it? It's going to be the floppy wiener. A lot of the movies are not rated is because they're foreign films. Even from Canada, the UK, stuff like that. When they come here to America, they're not playing in theaters. They're going straight to DVD. Like you said, you see them on the Redbox. So they don't have to go through the MPAA. You just put them out on DVD.
No.
So that's how a lot of those end up not rated. Another way you get a not rated movie is, and you see this a lot, this became a marketing gimmick a little while ago, all right? So you got a movie that comes out in theaters.
Yeah.
R-rated movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then they put it out on DVD with a couple extra scenes, and they say, here's the unrated cut. You know, implying, you know, now it's even more intense and over the top over the R-rated version. Because it's unrated.
It's unrated.
Ooh, take that. Take that, MPAA. Take that, America. That just means that they didn't resubmit the movie to the MPAA board. Because when you add new scenes or whatever, you got to give the movie back to the MPAA board if you want a new rating. But the movie's coming out on DVD. You don't have to do that. That's not necessary. So instead, the marketing people took advantage of that. And they said unrated over all these DVDs. Happens not with the comedies, you know, see, or action movies. See the unrated cut. And then you watch the movie. It's not necessarily more gross or ribald or raunchy or anything.
It's just a little bit longer.
A little bit longer. Maybe a little more boring.
Yeah.
Maybe a little worse.
Yeah.
But now it's unrated. Ooh,
sweet.
You gotcha, you suckers. You know. So beware of shit like that. And then another way they could be unrated is if they are older movies. For a while, for whatever reason, the RoboCop that was streaming on the Netflix, it said that was NR. They had that as NR or UR, unrated or not rated. I think they recently changed it to R.
Okay.
Because I think they now have the R-rated version on there as opposed to the director's cut.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, sometimes older movies will have that because just the old rating system doesn't match up to what's going on today. But, yeah, that's pretty much how you end up with the... With not rating stuff. It's not really so much laziness as it is. Well, maybe with the marketing department and trying to make more money, that's kind of lazy. But yeah, anyway. All right, so here we go. At @NathanWilliams_ on Twitter. Did you hear this rumor that they're remaking Poltergeist? My only question is why?
I have the same question.
I did not hear this rumor, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, it's a horror remake. They've been doing this for a while now.
First off, great point. Fantastic point. They've been doing this for a long time now. All the classics have been touched upon. Friday the 13th.
Psycho.
Psycho. Yes, Gus Van Sant did a shot-for-shot remake of it, goddammit. It was Gus Van Sant, you know? The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? They redid that whole thing. They're doing the Friday the 13th with Jason, Nightmare on Elm Street with Freddy. All of them. Everything. All the John Carpenter movies. The Fog.
The Thing.
The Thing. That weird Thing prequel thing that was just the worst. Because it's all there, built-in audience, it's all fodder. Carrie,
Halloween.
Remake, Halloween, the list goes on. So, Poltergeist?
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Not a surprise at all that a horror remake, now that you mentioned that, would be remade. Why? Because people know the name, they know, ooh, Poltergeist, you know, even people, the younger people that haven't seen the movie, they might still recognize the image of the kid in front of the TV, you know, or that they're here, that whole, you know, creepiness thing. I don't know how many of them were actual. What's his name? Charles Nelson Reilly? Is that the guy who played Coach Dad?
No idea.
Who played Coach Dad?
I forget.
Charles C. Nelson. Charles Nelson.
Oh, Coach?
Yeah,
Craig
Coach.
T. Nelson.
Craig T. Nelson. Who's I say Nelson? Someone else. See, I don't know. Are there really Craig T. Nelson fans? Or is
probably
it, are they clamoring for him to get a role in this Poltergeist remake?
Probably. No.
I'm not surprised.
They're going to be like, what the fuck is Coach?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not surprised these days about any remake of anything whatsoever. When they announced the Citizen Kane remake, or the Godfather remake, or anything like that, or Apocalypse Now, you know, something iconic like that, I'm not even going to bat an eye because, you know, of course.
Yeah. That's the business they're in now.
That's the business they've always been in. That's, you know, I like to mention how the Maltese Falcon, directed by John Huston, 1948, 49, 47, something like that, with Humphrey Bogart, Maltese Falcon. Everyone's at least heard of the Maltese Falcon.
Yes.
It's the most popular version of that movie. It's also the third version of that movie. They made the Maltese Falcon in the mid-30s, and they made it again in the early 40s. And then John Huston made it again in the late 40s. And the late 40s one is the one that stuck.
Nice.
So, you know, that shit used to happen all the time back in the day. Yeah, it's not that new. The thing is, what's new now is that we have DVDs and VHS and Wikipedia, so we remember everything, right?
Yep.
At Mr. Natathon queried this. Name three underrated movies you think everyone needs to see.
Drive. The Fountain, True Romance.
You think True Romance is that underrated? I don't think it's that underrated. I guess younger people need to know about it.
Most people don't even know about it. Anytime,
it is early 90s.
Anytime you bring up Tarantino's best work,
no one
everyone
True
says
Romance.
This, everyone says that, everyone says blah, blah, blah.
Because he didn't direct it, so it's not front of mind when you think Tarantino. But yeah, he is.
But he wrote it. It's a Tarantino.
You can tell. You can tell.
You watch the movie, and you're like, this is, yeah. No, yeah. It's a Tarantino movie.
Agreed.
100%.
So Fountain, True Romance, and Drive.
Yes.
That's a good three. I named Drive my favorite movie of 2011.
So when, I am pretty sure.
And,
I mean, I did spend $175 on the jacket.
The Fountain. I think I'm going to piggyback on the Fountain. I'm going to steal the Fountain because, you know, amateurs create professional steal.
So exactly.
I'm going to steal the Fountain from you. I'm going to make the Fountain one of my three underrated movies. What other? I can't think of. You know what's really underrated? Just been rewatching Coen Brothers, A Serious Man, which came out a few years ago. That was their post True Grit movie.
Yes.
And that one got no traction whatsoever. No one really paid attention to it when it came out. That's a really good one. Also, piggybacking on the Coen Brothers, The Man Who Wasn't There with Billy Bob Thornton, James Gandolfini, Francis McDormand from, that's like 2001, I think, black and white movie.
Mm-hmm.
That is an underrated gem right there. Love that. Love that movie. Also underrated, Steven Soderbergh's Solaris.
That was a good movie.
Very underrated film. I don't think enough people talk about it when it comes to sci-fi movies or stuff like that. Even Soderbergh movies in general. Not enough people mention Solaris. It's always, you know, traffic and stuff like that. So yeah, there you go. I think it's more than three. All right. Not bad.
No.
Not bad. All right, so do we have any more questions here? No, I do not. Let's see. Maybe we got one from good old Billy D, New York City senior correspondent Billy D. We need a drop for him, like a... Billy D.
I'm sure
Billy D's question of the week.
I mean, he does. He works at a video production studio. I'm sure somebody does audio there. I'm sure he can get that done.
Yeah, I'm sure he could. Yeah, get that done, dude.
And send it to us, Bill, so we don't have to do it for you.
And also send us a question of the week, because it looks like you can do that either. It's been a couple of weeks since we got a question of the week from Billy D. So that's fine. You know what?
He's a hardworking individual. He's probably doing something important.
Yeah, sure. Sandwiches. I feel like ending the show with questions. You know what I did, Drew?
What'd you do?
I grabbed an old lightning round.
Oh, you're going to reread it?
From, I think this is from around July 2013.
Okay.
It's an old lightning round. So let's have you go through an old lightning round, dude.
Sounds good.
All right, here we go. Start the clock, Drew.
Hang on a second. Here we go.
Number one. How do you like your coffee?
I really don't drink that much coffee.
Number two, Al Pacino or Robert De Niro?
Pacino.
Number three. What is best in life?
Food and weed and women. That's pretty much the best things in life.
Okay. Describe your high school days. 10 words or less. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't finish your question. Describe your high school days in 10 words or less. Now, please. Thank you.
Okay,
that's two.
Yeah. Okay.
Three,
sure.
Four, five. You got 5 words left. You're stopping at five?
Correct.
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Number five. Why do we dream?
Because it's our mind putting together all the thoughts from the day.
Number six. Which shape do you like the most? Circle, square, or triangle? Had options.
Triangle.
Number seven. Finish the phrase. Peanut butter and...
Nutella.
Number eight. A day at the beach or a day at a theme park?
Beach.
Number nine. Overkill or over easy?
Easy.
And number 10, true or false, for $10,000 you can clone your dog in North Korea.
True.
False. For $100,000 you can clone your dog in South Korea. So they clone dogs in North Korea, man. Get out of here. They don't even have enough rice to feed the people. You think they're cloning dogs? No, that shit's going out in South Korea, man.
Hey, you never know, man. Some of those elitist rulers do crazy shit with all the riches that they steal from like the peasant population.
Like they fly in Rodman and they have him pay a bunch of ex-NBA players to put on an exhibition game and lose on purpose to the national team so they can save face. So there you go.
Did not save any face.
So that was lightning round. Good job, Drew.
Thank you.
All right. So that's the end of episode 63. Thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll be back in a few days with the CCN for March 2014. Got to figure out what the hell we're going to talk about. And then we'll be back next weekend with episode 64, where we'll be talking about Noah and Sabotage. I'm looking forward to that a whole lot.
I'm really hoping Noah's going to be good.
So am I. Yeah, so am I. There you go. That's the Burt Beans end of the show.